This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I am so happy today. This is going to be so much fun. First of all, at the bottom, well, a little after the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to somebody from Nat Geo, and I love Nat Geo books, as everybody knows, and this one is particularly fun. It's 1,000 Facts About Space, and I'm holding it up to the camera if you're seeing it on camera. It is a beautiful book, and I am so looking forward to talking to Dean Regas about that. But the reason I feel so very cheerful is because I've been listening to my first guest, and I've been smiling all morning, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, and it was a big surprise because I didn't know I was going to have her today, and I want to thank particularly Bria Burton for introducing me to Shona Bedford. I think you are fantastic. Hi, Shona.
Oh, hi. How are you? And thank you. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, I think you're so funny. I got such a kick out of this book. I really needed a funny book, and it was just perfect. And it's called Red Flag Run. And I got the book, but then I thought, well, you know, I'll listen to the Audible too, because listen to the excerpt. And I've been laughing all morning. It is so funny. It is so good. And your voice, of course, is great because you're a singer.
Oh, well, thank you. I had a lot of fun recording it.
Well, I can hear that in your voice. You can always tell when somebody's narrating a book if they're having fun. And, oh, I... it made me laugh. It's fantastic. So,
well, thank you, ma'am.
You have to tell... Well, first of all, as I mentioned, you're a singer. And you, of course, have done some great recordings, and I think one of your you won for Rain. What did you win for Rain? It was a
best music video. Yeah, so that can be found on my YouTube channel.
So that was a music video that you won, and as I said, you have a great voice, so the Audible is just perfect.
Thank you.
And tell us the story. I mean, there's so many stories in this book. But Red Flag Run, what does that mean? And how did you come up with that idea? I love it.
Well, my father used to tease me as far as all these guys I dated. He was like, you date so many guys. And I said, well, because there's a time that you can see 90 days. You know, that they're pretending, and then they get to their real self. And it's just kind of, I've studied human behavior for, gosh, 30 years or so. And so it ended up being almost a game with my parents and I discussing it, because every single guy, it's so weird. It's like they have a manual of what they say, when they say it, how many days in. And I finally said, I was going to start doing seminars, you know, just trying to teach people about what to look out for, when to get out of a relationship. And I decided, you know what, the best way to do it is a book. Let's get a book out there, you know, that way people don't have to try to find time for a seminar, and let's just make it entertaining, fun, but also, you know, tackling really serious subjects.
You're right. They are very serious, but you put such a spin on them that it makes it absolutely just a joy to read. But it is, on the one hand, it is very serious, and there are a lot of people out there dating, and they could learn so much from you. And from this, I think one of the things is it will open people's eyes, because sometimes people are dating and they don't think about all of these possibilities.
Yeah, I some of the people that have read the book have said, you know what, I thought I was alone. I thought that it was just me. I thought that I was going crazy. And even one lady said, you know, I never thought that you would have problems dating because, you know, you seem to be so successful and so good looking. And I said, oh, you have no idea. It's like they seem to find all of us.
And I think you've been a great magnet.
You know, that's why there's so many chapters. But the way I wrote it was, you know, whenever you read a book and it seems like they repeat everything in the first chapter and you're just like, oh my gosh, you know, when is this book going to be done? And it just seems to be so repetitive. And I wanted to write short chapters where you wanted more by the end of the chapter. And so each one, though, changes the subject, but at the same time, it's, you know, get out of the relationship. Don't stay there. Just, you're okay to say, run. And that's kind of why I said red flag, run. There's so many red flags, and run.
Well, of course, it's RFR, which you use in the book. And I don't know if it's a popular phrase.
It is not.
Well, I think it should be. I think you should make it a popular phrase. And a real warning that women can give, oh well, men too, can give to each other and say, you know, this is an RFR because, woo. So what stories do you want to tell us about? Which, they're all so good.
Well, let's see. I would say for sure when people ask you to marry them within the first few days. It's so interesting because I've had so many guys do this, and it's just, you know, I kind of say, what's so fabulous about me? What is it that captivates you? And in my research, which is what I call it, I find out from some of their ex-girlfriends, they did the same thing with them. You know, it's a pattern. And so as soon as you hear the, oh, we could be together forever, we should be married, it's like, run. Or you're the love of my life. That's kind of the funny one that I, because my mom and I, we discussed so much. She wrote the foreword of the book. And it's like, oh, so how much does this guy love you, you know, after 2 days? Oh, well, you know, I'm the love of his life. I don't know if you got the memo, but I'm fabulous.
It's so funny. I mean, I have no dating experience, so
God bless you.
So I didn't go through any of this, and I can assure you, if I had to go through this nowadays with this horrible social media, the need, obviously, and you write about it, that there, I mean, I could not believe what you were writing, that men actually, you know, not only post things, but then wants you to respond to it. And if you don't respond to it quickly enough, they're like, why didn't you respond to me? This is true?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. You know, it's so interesting. It's like they have some sort of magnet that they know when you post. So they'll post something, oh, I love my beautiful girlfriend. And then I'll get a text from them and say, oh, did you see my post? Yeah, I saw it, but I'm working. Oh, well, why didn't you respond? Why didn't you comment? And then if you comment, they would comment back and then say, oh, did you like my comment? Well, yeah, it was nice. Yeah, but you didn't put a like or a heart on it. And it's just so draining. And some people pay attention that if you put a post up, why didn't you mention me in that post? And it's like, are you stalking me? What are you doing just paying so much attention? It's like they have no job. They have no time with friends. And that's another thing. If they want to accept your identity, they want to do everything with you, they want to do everything with your friends. Oh, I would like to go running with you when they've never exercised in their life. Or I love horses, for example. I loved a horseback ride. Oh, well, you know what? I've never been around a horse, but I could ride horses. I'm like, do you like animals? And they just want to take on your identity. And if they don't have an identity in themselves, if they don't have friends that they hang out with, then that's definitely an RFR moment.
It's just, when I was reading these stories and I was thinking of these men actually wasting their time posting things. In the first place, I don't understand why they would do it. I'm not really crazy about all of that, but I mean, I would prefer a man who was so busy working, making money, saving money, getting ahead in the world. I would not be impressed with a man who was actually posting that. I can see, you know, text messages where you say, well, let's meet at 5 o'clock or something, or thank you. But I can't imagine. It's mind-boggling. Why don't men understand that that really makes them look stupid?
I don't think so. That's why I say there has to be a manual. I don't know if it's advertised. I don't know how they know all this, but it's like they have an obsession, and they don't see that it is such a turnoff that we don't want to be smothered. You know, we don't want that, oh, I have to have you, or the constant text messages, or the constant posting, or the constant, you know, are you paying attention to my social media? Because wouldn't they want a woman who, same thing, works, has a life, you know, is trying to be productive in society, as opposed to, let me sit in a corner and hang on to your every word.
I just and the
they
way
they do exist. That's the sad thing.
It is really sad, and I think actually a lot of men should read this and realize, gosh, you look stupid.
I mean, one guy told me I'm going to use it as a how-to, not manual.
Well, they should, because it is ridiculous, and of course, one of the things is that women fall for this. I mean, just recently there was in the news some woman who fell for some guy, you know, chatting her up on her social media, and she gives him $12 million. He rips her off for 12. I mean, are you an idiot?
I think they're so desperate for... their self-esteem is so low, and they just need some sort of encouragement. They need to hear the I love yous, and they don't realize that they need to find happiness within themselves. And if they do that, they don't need that attention. They don't need, and that's one of the things I talk to a lot of women and even young girls. You know, this book is great for men, women. It's great for parents that are just back on the dating market. It's because they're looking for some sort of justification of, you know, I'm pretty, and they need to find it within themselves, as opposed to these people finding them. And then, like that lady, you know, giving, I can't even imagine, $12 million away. That poor lady, what was she thinking?
Well, one of the things that you do write about here is that one of the warning signs is for RFR is if a man asks you for money, if a man starts... Well, first of all, why is he asking you about your money? And if he wants money from you, that is definitely something that I would see as a warning sign.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And especially if they go kind of, are you going to pay for dinner? Or they don't take the check. You know, I was raised old school, and a man pays for dinner, a man pays for, and that's just the way I was raised. You know, I'm a very independent woman, though, but when a man... or a woman, you know, to a guy, it comes in and, oh, you know what, I don't have money to pay this, or do you want to move in, you know, and their purpose is, so you can pay half bills, you know, oh, are you going to contribute? I think in one of my RFR moments, the guy wanted me to move in and said, oh, well, I'm putting this much into the house, so you owe this much. And I'm like, no, because it's not my house. Well, you're living here. You asked me to move in, saying, oh, I'm going to pay, you know, the bills. Feel free to move in with me. But it's like a slowly manipulation and guilt trip of, oh, if I'm contributing time to you, or if I'm contributing this to you, you owe me, right? You owe me.
Well, I'm old school, too. I would never have gone out with a guy who didn't pay for food. not a chance would I have done it.
You know, they kind of search around. Like some guys say, oh, you're so successful, or I wonder, I travel a lot for business. And, oh, well, you know what? I could travel with you. And it's like, but what would you do? What would you do for work? I mean, oh, but I want to be with you for every minute. But what would you do to pay the bills? You know, I'm not. And so they do that sort of thing to try to get into your life and live off you.
And one of the things, of course, you mentioned in there is that if they start trying really to manipulate your life, your friends, your family, and if you're a woman who has children, this is definitely a warning sign.
Oh, absolutely. It's as soon as they start trying to tell you how you need to raise your kids, or, you know, I think I mentioned in the book how they manipulate your friends. Really? Are they really good friends? Why would they treat you like that? Why would they, when really your friends are just being their usual selves? You know, if you're like my best friend, she and I are very honest with each other. Sometimes she'll send me a text and say, you know what? You know me, I'm brutally honest. This is what I think. But that's what I love about her. You know, she's just, you know what you get. And so someone coming in and trying to manipulate and say, you know, does your family really love you? Why do they do this? And it's just a slow annihilation of the family and the friends, and then trying to tell you as far as your kids. Like me, I so regret allowing a man to help dictate how I raised my son. And unfortunately, he's had to deal with the trauma after the fact. And I feel so horrible about it. And it's something I beat myself up for every day. And I hear a lot of stories how men or women choose the significant other over the child. And, you know, you can make or break a child. That's your job as a parent. Your job is to help them grow into a successful human being. And if you're choosing a significant other over them, then that just proves that you really aren't. You should have never had kids. You know, you're not a worthy person.
Well, I think we've seen some evidence of that lately in in the big news, the news story of the year, that you have to be really always thoughtful about what's good for your kids. Now, when you mentioned things, one of the things that you mentioned about abusive men, and I remember many years ago, I had a really great friend, and went to her wedding, and then I moved out of the country. I was out of the country for many, many years, and when I came back, I hadn't seen her for like 20 years, and meanwhile, she'd gotten divorced, and so she invited me to her place, and I went there, and she said, you know, she told me the story, and she said, well, I realized that, you know, he hit me one time, and I just got up. As soon as he wasn't there, I got up, and I walked out. And I walked out without anything. She didn't take her clothes. She didn't take anything. She just wanted to get out of there. The only thing she took, and this is the weirdest thing, she took a fondue pot, a bright yellow fondue pot. And for all the years, she kept that as a reminder to her that she did the right thing, that she walked out without turning back before he injured her, because later on he did injure the next woman that he beat her to pulp. So she was always looking for over 20 years, she was looking at this fondue pot, and she knew it was a wedding gift, and she couldn't remember who had given it to her. And I looked at her and I said, I gave it to you.
Oh, wow.
I had given her, well, I always give yellow things. I'm like a crazy person for yellow. I had a yellow Hummer. I love yellow. And I had given it. She had no recollection that it was my gift, but that's the only thing she grabbed when she walked out of this abusive relationship. And you mentioned, you know, that in your story, that definitely that is a red flag if there's any hint of abuse.
Any hint, yeah. There was, if they get angry, I think it's like road rage is something simple. You know, I try to break it down in my chapters of simplicity where you can just see hints of this anger. And if they get so angry, I think one of the examples that I use in my chapter is this guy was talking to a telemarketer. And as soon as he hung up the phone, I'm so angry. I can't believe it. And I said, it was just somebody on the phone. Yeah, but I hate when they call. And that was a sign. As soon as you see any anger, as soon as they possibly grab you where it's just a little too much force, you got to get out. And in my chapter, there's some people who are truly fearful of their life. And I include, I believe it is a hotline in there. So if you're in that position and you're terrified for your life, which there is instances, you know, make sure you don't leave, but you call the number, because some of these guys will follow you. I was in a relationship where I was basically held for 2 years and told every day, you know, I will kill you if you leave. I will kill you. I will put a bullet in your head. Nobody will know. And I believe that manipulation. So it's a balance of get out if it's that early, but once you're in it for a few years, you know, you have to be careful and possibly call that hotline and just say, I need help. And that's what they're trained to do. They're trained to help you get out and keep you safe.
Well, you do have that number in the book, and that's why this book, you know, it's a funny book. Because of the way you tell the stories and because of your voice, you just have a wonderful, wonderful voice for narration. And
thank you.
I mean, I could listen to you really, literally, for hours and hours because just your voice is so good. But there's this serious side to the story. So it's not just that you've written, you know, some, but I think putting it into that perspective makes it easier for people to read and to listen to. And you learn a lot in this book. And I really want to thank you so much, you know, for being on Joy on Paper so that we can share this. And I can tell my listeners about a book that I think is really valuable. And there are so many people out there. Well, the dating world is not easy nowadays.
Forever. No, not easy. And that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to help people, and I wish somebody would have told me all these red flags early on. And one of the most important things I would like to tell people is you don't owe anyone an explanation. They will always say, well, tell me why I deserve an explanation. No, they don't, because that's a way they manipulate to bring you in, to keep you in the relationship. You do not owe anyone anything.
So what's the best way if you want to end a relationship? What should you do? How should you do? You have to say anything? What is there a message you have to give them? How do you just end it, or do you just nowadays just block them?
I would say block them. If you want to send a text message, and it's okay to break up in a text message. A lot of people will say, I can't believe it. But if they're toxic, it's okay. If they want to block their number, block their social media, block their friends, block any avenue that they have to keep contact with you. And the hardest thing is to walk away, but it's okay to walk away. Just block it all and move on.
Exactly, because you don't want to put yourself in a situation where your life is in danger or your reputation is in danger. And in general, talk about just how much should people give information about themselves online?
I'm very weary. So, for example, I don't even say what city I live in. I don't say what city I live in. If they ask, I say the state. I don't check into places, and if I would check into places, I wait until the next day after I've left that area. I say only reveal a minimal amount. Don't give your kids' names out. Don't say how old they are. You know, you can say if you have siblings, but keep it very minimal until a few months in, because you have to see if that person is truly interested in dating, or are you the next victim?
Well, that's great advice, because I think people are giving out too much. And as you say, when people are desperate, they want on both sides, they want a relationship. And for some reason, this social media, I think, has made it so much more difficult, because people can find out about you and because you share too much. And it's not coming through, you know, the meetings and the dating so much is not coming through from, you know, friends of your family or friends of your friends. It's with people who are completely unknown to you.
Keeping people, like I always check if somebody sends me a friend request, I check what the mutual friends are. If it's only like two, I go to their page, I look at their page. If it's private, no way did I accept them. I would say keep things minimal. A lot of my stuff is public, but it's not personal. A lot of people think they know me, but they don't actually know me. I talk about my son, but he's a professional drummer. He's a streamer. So that's something different. He's got a public profile himself.
And he's now an adult, too. And so it's not It's not like you're talking about kids, which really
it's not
people should
minor.
Not do. So how, of course, the book is on the...
It's on Amazon.
On Amazon. And people can get it there. And it's called Red Flag Run. Now, is there another site where people can find out more about you? Or do you... social media? What do you do? How do you people...
Social media? I have a Shauna Bedford official fan page. They can find that out through there. They can see me on YouTube, Instagram. My Instagram is public. My Facebook personal page, quite a few things is public. They can always send me a message, and then I would take it from there. But YouTube, Facebook, okay. Twitter.
So you're also very busy. I know that you... Are a songwriter, are you writing screenplays right now?
I am not, but I do have some of my short films on my YouTube channel, which is just Shauna Bedford. I do have a couple. One was nominated for Best Screenplay, and it's a good way of just seeing my messages. You know, I like to, all of my films have deep meaning to them. Like one is about someone passing from cancer. Another one is just a woman contemplating whether she should keep her child. I don't tell people what to do. I just kind of share stories and let them think of things.
Okay, so that's on your YouTube channel, and it's Shauna Bedford. Shauna is spelled S-H-O-N-N-A. And Shauna, it's been really a pleasure to talk to you. I'm so happy that I got your book. As I said, it's funny, but it's also a very serious subject. And I think you've done a wonderful job with the book.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. And thank you so much for allowing me to come on and talk about it. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's been a joy to talk to you. And I, again, want to thank Bria Burton so much for introducing us, because she is fantastic.
Yes, ma'am.
And she does
she is amazing.
She does the book buzzes here and promos for sci-fi books. And she is going to be a guest host here in February, and I am so excited. She's going to do the entire program, so I will be announcing more about that as soon as she lines up her guests, and she will be the guest host here on Joy on Paper. And again, thank you so much, Shauna. It's been a joy to talk to you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now. All right.
Bye.
Let's do a book buzz and the commercials, and then I'll be right back.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. It's a new year, so what better way to start the new year by reading a new book? Unsure which book to read? Don't worry, Stacy has you covered. Stacy is the character from the brand new book, Stacy's Remarkable Books. This, based on a true story, was written by Stacey Abrams and illustrated by Kit Thomas. Stacey's Remarkable Books tells the story of Stacey, who loves getting lost in her favorite books. Stacey eventually meets a girl named Julie, who has little trouble reading in English. Together, they start sharing books so she can practice, and the rest of the students in their class join along. Almost 10 years ago, Stacey Abrams received an unexpected note from Julie, thanking Stacy for her friendship and how they were able to bond over books. It was this friendship that became the basis for the book. Already the number one new release for children's books on girls and women's issues on Amazon, Stacy's Remarkable Books is the companion to the number one New York Times bestseller, Stacy's Extraordinary Words. It's a tale from Stacy's childhood about the power that books have. When reading this book, I think this book will have the power to bond people together. just like how Stacy and Julie's friendship stemmed from a bond over books. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi! This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Dean Regas. Wow, this is an unbelievable book. It's called 1,000 Facts About Space, a National Geographic book. It's so beautiful. I'm holding it up to the camera, and I am so happy to welcome you to the program, Dean. Are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Okay. You're a little soft, but let's try.
All right, let's try it again. How's this? A little bit better?
That's better. Okay. Now we can hear you. I'm so happy that you're on the program because, first of all, this book is absolutely gorgeous. It is so beautiful. But, of course, that's what I expect from Nat Geo. They always make the best books. And
It's one of those great design books with lots of great pictures in it and 1,000 facts about space.
Wow. Well, I think perhaps maybe one of your favorite people in the book, of course, must be Aristarchus, right?
Aristarchus, yes. I have a section about the book about astronomers in the past, and he is a guy goes way back. I mean, in the ancient Greek days, discovered all sorts of stuff, including maybe proposing that the Earth went around the sun, one of the first people to do that.
Well, he must be a hero of yours because you're an astronomer.
Exactly. Yeah, Greek American. So I kind of like associate with the ancient Greek astronomers.
Oh wow, that's where it comes from. You Greeks have been looking at the stars for a long time and trying to figure out what the heck is going on up there.
I feel like it's part of it's in my blood to be a stargazer, and fell in love with the subject about 25 years ago, and dove in and learned all I could about space, and I am still like a big kid, and writing this book for National Geographic was, you know, kind of one of those things. Like, I hope that really appeals to kids, but also the adults that are, you know, kind of want to connect with their kids that might be really interested in space.
This book, everybody will love this book. I don't care what age, you will just love this book. And it is so beautiful. As you said, it's so beautifully done. But you put it together with all the interesting stories, all the fascinating facts that you've discovered. I myself love space because I worked with Apollo astronaut Walt Cunningham. And mm-hmm. So I had the opportunity to go behind the scenes at Johnson Space Center, met a lot of the astronauts. So I was particularly, crazy about all of the things that you wrote here about the Apollo mission and just about all the facts that you've discovered.
Oh, yeah, that's an amazing experience to work with NASA and get the behind-the-scenes tour. And I met several astronauts too. They are just exceptional humans. It's being an astronaut is one of those things you can kind of dream about, and actually meeting them are really amazing. But I think that's the part that comes through the book too, is that we can't travel to these places ourselves, so we have to use our imagination. And I hope that the book kind of excites people's imagination by kind of mentally taking them to the rings of Saturn and Pluto and stars and galaxies and kind of hitching a ride with their imaginations out there.
Well, poor Pluto.
Poor Pluto, that's right. I know. It's been a non-planet, can you believe it? It's been 16 years. 16 years it was removed from planet status.
To me,
so, but I did give it a whole section in the book. It's under dwarf planets and other things. It's but Pluto, yeah. It was a tough thing losing a planet, and I understand it's traumatic. I do have another book about that called How to Teach Grown-Ups About Pluto.
Oh, good.
It's for the grown-ups that are traumatized from the loss of Pluto as a planet. So hopefully it'll help guide you through it.
Well, I hope so, because I really was. I mean, this sounds silly, but I was traumatized.
It's a loss, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it really, people felt it. It was a loss that, it was like from their childhood, they remember the planets, and one of them's gone, and why? And there's good reasons, it's one of those things that we've explored now with a spacecraft, too. So now we have these close-up pictures of Pluto, which are just amazing. So I call it a wild, incredible world.
Yes. But I was happy to see that. So you had so much fun doing this. You have the wonderful, wonderful collection of photos that Nat Geo has. But then to pull it out and pull out all these facts and put it in a fascinating way to read about it. Well, let's talk about, there's so many things to talk about. Let's talk a little bit about Venus, because everybody's always interested in Venus. So tell us about Venus.
Well, Venus is the surprisingly hottest planet. So it's the second planet from the sun. Mercury's closer, but Venus is actually hotter because it has a very dense atmosphere that sucks up the heat and won't let it go. So the sunlight comes in, and I always joke that'd be a great weather forecaster on Venus, because every day is cloudy and 900 degrees Fahrenheit.
You know, that'd be a great line for a guy. You're my Venus. You're the hottest thing.
Of course, you melt into a pile of goop when you get near them, but that's all, that's beside the point.
Yeah, hanging around a bar, that might be a nice pickup line.
I like it.
Yeah, people can pick that one up. What I really love when, as I said, you talk here about, we have a little bit of time, to talk about everything, but I do want to make sure that we mention about the humans on the moon section, because it's hard to believe how long it's been, and that, I don't know when we're going to be back there, but it's still hard to believe how many years ago it was.
It really is. The last people to walk on the moon was 50 years ago. That's when they left. And so it's been a long time coming. They're starting some new missions here called Artemis that's planning to send people back to the moon again by the end of the decade. So that's pretty exciting. But seeing these old pictures and the videos of people walking on the moon, it is one of those moments of the 20th century that I think sticks with a lot of people. So what's next? Maybe we'll go back to the moon, but then eventually I think the ultimate prize, sending people to Mars. And I do believe we're going to do it. It's just a matter of time.
But I think it's going to be a little ways off. But I had expected that we would already have, you know, space stations on the moon. I was surprised that it hasn't happened by now.
No, you're absolutely right. This is, you know, people were envisioning this as going a lot faster. And what we found is going in space is incredibly, incredibly dangerous. And the distances to these things are astronomical. Like, when we think of going to the moon, it's a three-day rocket journey. So it only takes 3 days to get there. But if you want to go to Mars, it would take you 7 months to get there. And that presents a whole lot of problems of being in space for that long. And it's a daunting task, that's for sure. So being an astronaut is not all glamour. It is difficult and dangerous too.
Well, you know, going back to the astronomers page, again, a lot of Greeks there, but it's funny how it took a while before people realized that the Earth was round, or that this took a while.
It did. The idea that the Earth was round, the first people that kind of wrote about that were ancient Greeks. It was Aristotle that said it in about 350 BC. He came up with the idea that, the Earth is round because when we see a lunar eclipse, we can see the Earth's shadow on the moon, and it's round. So it's kind of cool to think, like, people have been talking about this for more than 2,000 years. I don't know about you, but when I was in history class and they were talking about Christopher Columbus sailing across the ocean, that, you know, he was afraid he was going to fall off the Earth, that's not true at all, because he read Aristotle and he knew the Earth was round even then. So he had the great adventures knowing the Earth was round. But when I look back at the history of astronomy, there's so many amazing discoveries that people made even before the invention of the telescope, that they were able to figure out the distance to the moon, the size of the Earth, that kind of stuff. It's just incredible.
Well, talking about astronomers, let's mention a few that people don't know about. Hypatia?
Yeah, Hypatia was one of the great astronomers you might never have heard of. Really amazing, living in Alexandria, Egypt, and she was instrumental in making new star charts and even new techniques, and was a math wizard. I mean, one of the brightest minds of the ancient world.
And nobody knows about her. And very few people know about Benjamin Banneker. And he was an astronomer over 200 years ago, and he was the first, I think, African-American astronomer.
Absolutely. One of the premier astronomers in the United States, actually, at that time, and was amazing. She published all these almanacs. They're kind of in the predecessors of the almanacs we have today, kind of telling what's going on in the sky, what's coming up, and really inspiration to me, because when I do, how I got into astronomy was I do astronomy education mainly. So I go around and the country, give talks about astronomy, and it's kind of in the same vein of what he did and how he wrote about space to make it really accessible to people.
Well, you know what, I'm glad that you mentioned this, going around and talking. I'm happy that now hopefully you can go to schools and you can go to, you know, places where you can actually meet young people and get them excited about space, get them excited about astronomy. There are so many positions that are available to young people if they study science and if they take an interest in science and math.
Absolutely.
I find it so, for me, it's always been, I was raised in northern Michigan, and we had stars. I mean, that was part of our entertainment. I mean, we didn't have television. Even today, television's very difficult. We have spotty reception in northern Michigan. We used to lay out in the summertime and look at the stars. That was our theater.
I know, and that's one thing that's a little lost on today because of light pollution and bigger cities, and most people can't see the Milky Way. And that's what I hope that people, when they read this book, kind of get inspired. They can find some different sections of the book that might resonate with them. Maybe it's galaxies, maybe it's stars, maybe it's Pluto. But then there's also a section of, you know, viewing the night sky, really cool things to look for up there. And for me, it's, I live in a city in Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Observatory, where I work, is 5 miles from downtown, so we're not in a very dark sky. But part of my lifestyle, I guess, would be that I go out, and when I do vacations, I try to seek out dark places and dark skies where you can see the sky how it's meant to be, whether that's the national parks, Upper Peninsula, Michigan, wherever you can go to find dark skies. I hope people get out and get encouraged to do that from reading the book.
Well, it definitely, you get dark skies in the UP. We don't have any.
One of the best sites up there.
It is. It absolutely is. We don't have any, very many towns up there. So it's great. I want to mention one number, 88. Tell us about 88.
88. Well, only one thing comes to my mind, so I'm hoping it's the same thing. 88 for me, when you say that, is the number of days it takes for Mercury to go around the sun. Is that what you were thinking of?
No, I'm thinking.
No.
This is funny. I was so happy. It's very funny. When I opened the book, you know, I just opened the book, and I opened it to 88 official constellations.
Oh, right, of course.
You remember that?
I was on planets.
You were on
right.
planets.
88 is an interesting number. Yeah, I mean, number of keys on a piano, number of counties in Ohio where I live.
So I went to
Mercury first, because I like to point this out, is that, you know, for kids especially, they really love knowing how old they would be on other planets.
I love that section.
You have your birthday every year because you go around the sun in 365 days. On Mercury, you'd be four times as old.
kids love that kind of thing. Well, I love that kind of thing. And the reason I love 88 is it turned out to be a question that the examiners for a Mensa test did not know that.
Really?
Yes. My son went for a Mensa test to get into Mensa, and one of the things they asked was give a number and why you like it, okay? And the first thing he did was 88 keys on the piano, but that's because his brother played the piano, and he was a violinist. And then he said, because there are 88 known constellations.
Now, that is right.
There were three examiners, PhD examiners, and they didn't know that. And that was before the time of internet searching, and they had to go and check it. And they called me back and they said, you know, he's right. I said, yeah. so they let him get into Mensa. And
that's good.
Yeah, he was five
years
old.
Yeah, I mean, the 88 constellations are, that dates back to about 1930, when the International Group of Astronomers got together and said, you know, we got to designate what makes up a constellation, because there are all these different traditions. And so the constellations like Orion and Taurus and Gemini, these go back to the ancient days. And so it's really cool to think of the constellations we see today are the same ones people have been looking at for thousands of years. Their outlines have barely changed. So when we see Orion, it's the same way people saw Orion 3,000 years ago.
And my son was 5 years old at the
That's
time.
That's incredible. It'd be Mensa at five, and he's already schooling the PhDs. That's pretty good.
Well, yeah, he was... he's got his PhD. He was a very advanced student, to say the least.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but it was fun, and so I remembered that when I saw the 88, and I love that page because it does talk about the mythological facts about constellations, which I think everybody likes to know their star sign. And why, you know, they're named after the different animals, or mostly animals and people. But it's beautifully done. I love this section.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I because mythology is part of how I got started in astronomy. I was doing planetarium shows, and I'd have to give the old myths behind the stars and constellations. And so I read all these old myths and tried to modernize some of them, too, because when you retell some stories, it's always good to put your own little flavor on those. But this is a good time of year to get out there and look for some constellations. We got Orion up there that's really nice and easy to find with the three stars in a row. And so I encourage people, get out there, do some stargazing, and if you don't see the constellations, make up your own.
And of course, well, they might find a UFO, and you have that here in also.
Yeah, there's sections on UFOs and unidentified flying objects, which I clearly say are not aliens. They're always unidentified or unidentifiable, but it's one of those kind of entry points that people get interested in astronomy because they're like, what are these mysterious lights in the sky? And I do have to tell people in the audience, if they are listening, that if they see a bright light in the southwest right after sunset, it is not a UFO. It is the planet Venus. And this is Venus season. We get calls to the observatory all the time at this time of year thinking, well, I saw a UFO in the sky, and we just have to tell them, nope, it's the planet Venus. It's an honest mistake. It looks like a UFO.
And, of course, you also, well, because you work there, there's a wonderful section about telescopes. And boy, it's amazing what we've developed over the past, 20, 30 years, these telescopes that can see, well, I don't know what they see, how far they see.
Incredible distances. Yeah, the telescope, the first telescope that we know of was made about 1609. And then it was about the size of a little toy telescope, and now the sizes of scopes are incredible. The one at the Cincinnati Observatory is one of the oldest in the country, built in 1845. But then we've got telescopes like the Hubble telescope up in space. We've got the big Keck telescopes on the Big Island of Hawaii that are 40 feet across, how wide their mirrors are. Oh, and then, of course, the James Webb Space Telescope.
I'm running out of time. This is a wonderful book. It's a Nat Geo book, 1,000 Facts About Space. And Dean Regas, you are wonderful. You're an astronomer at the Cincinnati Observatory. You've done a beautiful job with this book. It is so wonderful. And everybody, you will love this book. Get this book for a kid in your family, but get it for yourself. I just want to keep it there next to my couch. And when I'm in between at commercials, you want to pick this up. And there's 1,000 facts, so that will keep you busy, right?
Exactly. Oh, I'm so glad you like it. Thanks so much.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I always tell my listeners, if they want to do something great, order one of these books directly and have it sent to a children's hospital, because any kid in a hospital, oh my goodness, the hours and hours of joy it would give them.
Oh, that's a great idea. I think that's a great way to do this. And yeah, you can flip open any page, learn a new fact every day, multiple facts every day.
Exactly. And all you have to do is go online, order it, and have it sent directly to the hospital, and some kid will be very, very happy.
Oh, thanks so much, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're wonderful. You've done a beautiful job. Thank you so much, Dean. Bye-bye now.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Keep looking up.
Okay. Bye-bye.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
It's time for the Thursday edition of Canada Calling, the news from home for vacationing Canadians. Pryor-Smith speaking from Toronto. It's good to have you with us. Canada's making yet another contribution to Ukraine's war effort. We send 8 armored vehicles.